Hello, everyone, and welcome back for a brand new episode of the Endless Spiral podcast. I am, as always, your host, Keith Russell. I've been on a bit of a sabbatical or in hibernation, as someone has told me recently, for a while. But I've decided I wanted to come back for a very special episode this week. So this week, I am joined by the brilliant and the amazing Emma O'Sullivan. So you might have seen Emma all over the place at the moment, sharing her own story. And she's also raising awareness for, obviously, mental health. So Emma is raising funds for her own inpatient treatment. So we're going to be chatting about that. We're going to be chatting a bit about OCD, with eating disorders, Emma sharing her story in the press and how she's been with all of that. And we've also got a bit of body dysmorphia thrown in there, which obviously you'll have heard me going on and on and on about it for so many times. We're going to be talking about the system and we're going to be talking about whatever else comes to our minds. So Emma, thanks very much for coming on. And you actually managed to get me out of hibernation to come back to the podcast. Well done.
I did. Thank you so much for having me, Keith. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. How are you anyway?
I'm good. There's been so much going on the last couple of weeks. It's just been a massive roller coaster, really. But so much coming out of it as well in a positive way. So that's been amazing, you know, meeting people like you and so many different people who have just been inspiring and doing things like this, which should have become so great and get me up in the morning and give me some passion. So yeah, it's been good.
Yeah. And then obviously I'm sure people saw my social media. I was at your event, which I still can't get over. You did that in 2 weeks. It was a bit of a fundraiser, but it was also like, there was a panel and those kind of musicians, and it was a brilliant turnout for obviously like raising awareness, and there's a fundraiser for yourself. And we are going to get onto that. Trust me, I promise we were going to get onto that. But I think it might be best maybe if we just kind of step back in time and maybe start at the beginning, so we can kind of give the listeners a bit of an idea of how you got to where you are now.
Sure.
You know, so obviously we mentioned OCD and eating disorders, you know, obviously that wasn't always there, but these kind of started as you were younger.
Yeah. So for me, like really looking back, I kind of noticed the OCD starting first nearly now, which is interesting, kind of going back in my mind. And the thing is, I don't think it was caught, you know, and I don't think it was something that was known quite a lot about. And I always wonder in my mind, like, if that was caught, how different my life would be, you know, where would I be now? But, you know, from that as well, I think we can always wonder that in our lives, I suppose, if this didn't happen, where would I be now? From that OCD, I suppose, I remember I was about 8 or 9, like looking at my legs and just being absolutely like disgusted by them. And I suppose not really knowing why. And that really spiraled into a slow kind of sneaky eating disorder. So I developed anorexia, which kind of spanned from, I'd say, about 13 till my 20s. So it took a massive, massive chunk of my life.
I mean, I'm sure people are aware of what OCD is, but do you have like a way that you can explain it in your own words?
Sure. So OCD, it's obsessive compulsive disorder. And I suppose there's a lot of different subsets of OCD. A lot of people think OCD is just kind of, I want to have my pens in line a certain way, or, you know, it's just, you know, you hear people saying, oh, I'm so OCD about this, you know. But for me, it's a lot to do with contamination. So it's very restricting. For example, I find it very hard to be in public transport. I can't really go into traveling, for example, into another bed, because I'm convinced that I will get something from that. Like I'll get some sort of bugs or something like that. And even though I am such a logical person, logic with OCD just does not work for some reason. And I think that's the most frustrating and confusing thing, because you can tell yourself, you know, it's okay, I'm safe. But the OCD just completely overrides that, because you're in nearly like a fight or flight, you know, your immediate response is protection. So it has gone from extreme cleaning, using like really harsh chemicals on my hands and on my body to clean. You know, another subset of OCD is somatic OCD. So it's a bodily OCD where you can actually feel things kind of crawling on you. You can have different bodily sensations, which is extremely distressing and has caused a lot of trauma, I suppose. And then there's the intrusive thoughts with OCD, which are another major thing. So they are thoughts that continuously kind of come in, and they can't be reassured by logic. They can't be settled. So you kind of just have to live with them, I suppose, and kind of ride that out. So it's a very debilitating and a restrictive thing. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So not only is it mentally draining, it's physically draining as well.
Exactly. Yeah. I was actually listening to a study the other day, and it said that OCD is, I probably have the wording of this wrong now, but OCD is number 7 on the list of the most debilitating diseases, both mentally and physically, in the world, because it's just so difficult to treat and deal with. Yeah.
I was just going to ask you, so like, did anyone ever pick up on any traits when you were younger, or was this all something that you kind of just lived with it yourself? You know, like, we can all sweep things under the rug, or maybe mask it, or maybe you're just not too self-aware of it yourself. Yeah. Was any of that going on?
I think if it was me, I would notice it now in a kid or something. And it's easy to kind of look back and think, how was this not noticed, you know? But I suppose it's so easy to kind of dismiss and be like, it's just a quirk, or Emma's just clean, or Emma's just kind of a shy, fearful kid, you know? But if I could look back and see that in a kid now, it would be very recognizable. Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because I mean, I get asked that question a lot, you know, being a parent, like, is there anything that you would do now? And I always say that as well, because you've kind of lived through certain things, you're more self-aware, but you're more aware of things to look for.
Exactly.
You know, in the kids or whatever. But
yeah.
Did anyone ever pick up on any of kind of like the eating habits, for example, because you mentioned obviously anorexia there?
Yeah, so that was the thing that was kind of most picked up on, really, I suppose. That was the thing that kind of, you know, I was brought to a GP and then kind of further referred to CAMHS, which is I don't know if you know it, the Child and Adult Mental Health, I suppose, organization. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's when things kind of started really going downhill. There is a lot of controversy around CAMHS at the moment, and I suppose the kind of mismanagement of medication and treatment, I suppose. And for me, my treatment was very mismanaged. I would go to them, I would get weighed, I would kind of get very minimal treatment. And then as I got sicker, it was just kind of, oh, you need to eat, you know, you just need to eat. And that got me to a point where I got so sick. I actually ended up being admitted into a hospital for 6 months, which was, I was about 15, which was a massive, scary, scary thing to happen. So I think I've experienced a lot of the mental health system, mismanagement, I suppose, overall view of things that need to be changed. Yeah.
So you were 15 when you had your first kind of experience with public health service.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And when you were finished there in your in the hospital, what happened next? So are you just sent off on your own, or is there someone to check in on you, or what happens next?
So basically then you're left off and you're kind of referred back to CAMHS, which was another hard thing because that's how I kind of deteriorated, first of all, you know. So I was in this very tough situation of, okay, I was kind of recovering from hospital and then going back into CAMHS, where I felt like I wasn't really being looked after. You know, I didn't feel good going there. I suppose I tried to find my own coping mechanisms and tried to use what they taught me in the hospital to nearly kind of self-recover, I suppose, which was quite tough. And, you know, I still to this day have problems. The OCD does affect my eating now as well. But yeah, that was definitely tough coming out and going back into the same situation I was in. Previous.
Okay. So what are these coping mechanisms that they taught you to at least try? And did they work?
Yeah. Basically with the eating disorder, it was firstly based on like physical refeeding, which is actually a really kind of a serious process that a lot of people don't know about. It can be really dangerous. So you need to do it in a slow process. So it's a lot of meal plans. And it's a lot of kind of help from dietitians. And it was basically kind of 24-hour care, medical watch. And then, you know, there would be groups and I would have nurses that would kind of help you through bad moments and stuff like that. So I tried to take as much out of that as I could at 15. And then when I left, I kind of had, for I'd say about a year or two, kind of continued with meal plans, you know. Right. So just to kind of try and keep myself at a certain weight. So yeah, it's been definitely very turbulent. I feel like I've lost a lot of my life to mental health issues, really. Yeah.
I'm just going to pick up on something you mentioned at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Is that you said if you hadn't gone through these things, you wouldn't be where you are today.
Yes.
And I just, the reason why I'm going back to that is because it kind of just dawned on me that I was asked the same, I have been asked that same question a few times in a slightly different way, but pretty much similar, saying like, you know, would I change anything? Or if I had to speak to the younger Keith, what would I say? But it's funny because my answer was very similar to yours. And I know we spoke at the event on Saturday
we
and
did.
We were able to relate, you know, so much, but just that particular, because I say the same thing. I'm like, no, because I feel like I've gone through so much that if I hadn't had to deal with all them things, I wouldn't be so aware of myself and my issues.
Exactly.
And my strengths and my, you know, I'm more self-aware now of stuff.
Definitely. And that's so true. I mean, I know it was like a really hard time for me, and especially this last year and these last couple of months, you know, I wish I could have gotten treatment and I wish now I could be in treatment. But I would never, ever take back the experiences I've had in the last couple of months to be in a faster place than I am now, because it's just been invaluable, the memories I have and the lessons I've learned, the people I've met. So, you know, I really think this is a journey for me. And, you know, I'm not a religious person really, but I think in a way it seems like some sort of a spiritual journey as well, because I'm learning a lot about myself, a lot about what I can be, my inner self. And you know, days are really tough, like they're really, really hard, and nights are hard, but you know, these little things are kind of getting me through. Kind of advocating and doing these type of things. So yeah, I would be the same answer as you.
So what would be a regular day for you at the moment, Emma? Now, let's just say, say forget you're doing a podcast or forget you're doing an interview, and we'll get to all of that as well. So, but just say, you know, just say you didn't have anything specific like that to do. What would be a regular day for you?
Yeah, so basically I wake up and most of the time it's in kind of panic. So I wake up in fear a lot. So that's kind of straight away. And then my next thing would be thinking, okay, what do I need to clean now? You know, if I'm doing something, having a shower, I really need to do everything properly to kind of feel okay. And then would be going on to food. You know, I can't really eat at home because I would be like sanitizing utensils and stuff. So there's specific places I go to eat, or like packaged food with like a reusable like spoon or something. So, and then it's kind of that energy of trying to like get dressed, get ready. What am I going to do for the day? I rely massively on my family for kind of support around that. So it's very hard in that way. I feel like I've lost a lot of my independence. You know, I find it very tough to even be on my own for like a couple of hours. You know, it's my thoughts get extremely intrusive. So it's just really, you know, throughout the day, then it's how am I going to eat the next meal? What is it going to be? Can I get sick from this? Like a million things come up where I get panicked and nervous and I don't know what's going to happen. I get bodily sensations and it's exhausting. Yeah. It's a massive struggle. Yeah.
I was literally just going to say that. I know we said it earlier about being exhausting, but just listen to you, you know, breaking up your day. That's Christ almighty. That is exhausting.
Yeah.
Wow. And would you crash? I mean, obviously you would crash at some stage day. Like, would you try and have a nap, or is that not practical? Or
yeah, I do. So like some days I just absolutely crash and would like have a sleep, and you know, I wake up kind of in the same position. So that's hard. That is really hard. But you know, at least I can sleep now for a little bit. Before, I found it very hard to sleep, which was made everything extremely more intense, you know, when you're not sleeping. But you know, having rest is like a really important thing for me, because I can kind of gather myself a little bit more after that. Yeah
Okay, all right. So the OCD is kind of what's driving the other things, is that
definitely? Definitely.
So you mentioned earlier on about your, you know, your legs and that, and obviously when we spoke at the event on Saturday, we both spoke about body dysmorphia, and we were both kind of both saying that, like, or at least I said it anyway.
Yeah,
it was great to have a conversation with someone else.
Definitely,
who kind of got it, if you know what I mean. Although, for, I know, sure, it's always good to get a male and a female perspective on it. Now, obviously, people have heard my story loads of times, but like, what's your take on body dysmorphia? I mean, I don't mean in like in a clinical sense. Like for you, like how does it affect you?
So I never really told anyone for a long time about the body dysmorphia. I would try and mask it like quite a lot. So for me, I really, really struggled looking at myself. Like, I would never allow anyone to take a picture of me. And even looking in the mirror, like it would take me like 3 to 4 hours in the morning to get ready, because I could not look at myself. And I couldn't, when I would see people in public, you know, I've worked in retail for a bit, looking at themselves in the mirror, I couldn't understand how they were doing it and seeing themselves. Like that thought to me was like, I was just mind blown how they could look at themselves and recognize themselves. Because, and I've said this even in conversations with my mom and other people, like I truly have felt that I have been born into the wrong body.
Yeah you said
and
that to me.
Yeah And it's such a strange experience, because it's not in a way where I feel like I should be somebody else. I don't know what that somebody else would look like. It's just, even from a young age, I feel like my person inside me should be in another body. And it's been an extremely like distressing thing, you know, because you can't avoid mirrors, you know, your reflection passing places. So yeah, it's been something very, and nobody I know has been through anything like this or experienced anything like this. So talking to you was kind of like a relief, seeing, oh my God, somebody else is having or had this experience.
Yeah.
Because even like I would look at my arms or and just feel like this out of body experience where this isn't me, you know? So it's very, very confusing and very disorientating, I suppose. Yeah.
I said to you on Saturday, even like about the shadow. Do you remember I said that
yes,
to you?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So if anyone's, obviously I've said it before, but I'll say it again today. So when I was younger, I used to like dislike my shadow on the ground. I didn't like the silhouette of my shadow. That's how bad things were at the time. I'll tell you something now that
do.
Yesterday when I posted something on my stories about this podcast, the picture of you and me.
Yeah.
I was standing side profile.
Yeah.
And I never share pictures of my side profile. I hate it.
Really?
And that took an awful lot from me yesterday.
Oh, wow.
To do that. Wow. But because it was you and because we were doing this podcast today, I was like, you know what, Keith? I'm doing it and I'm going to share it.
Oh, wow. Congratulations, yeah. Keith. Yeah. Honestly, takes a lot.
Yeah, it did. It actually did. That actually took me kind of a lot to do that. So but the reason why I'm mentioning it is that it's still an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
I'd probably live with it for the rest of my life, but at least for me anyway, I'm so much better about things and I've put a lot of work into myself and I've got amazing people around me, as definitely. You know,
yeah,
that are very supportive and that are just amazing and that help me along now. So it's been tough, but like I'm in a much, much, much better place now. Thank God for that. Thankfully.
Yeah.
But look, let's get back to you anyway. So
no.
So the event on Saturday, right? So
yes,
that was amazing. There's stuff all over social media. It's on mine. It's on yours. It's on loads of other people's. And if you're not too sure, guys, what I'm talking about, go back onto mine or Emma's social media and you'll see pictures from it there. And I think there's a couple of videos as well. So anyway, Emma, let's talk about this event.
Sure.
Why did you do it and how did it come about?
Yeah, so basically the whole event came about because I've started GoFundMe really to try and raise funds to get into inpatient treatment for my OCD. And it had been really like the last thing I ever thought I would do. You know, I never thought I would put my story out there. And so the event came about because unfortunately the GoFundMe is going quite slow, which is really frustrating kind of on a day-to-day basis. Because I'm so ready to kind of get into treatment and get started. So we were trying to be creative and come up with different ways to raise some money. So we had this event in the black market and it took a lot, you know. It was me and my boyfriend kind of planning. So it took a lot of energy, but it turned out to be a great day. And for me, it turned out not to be so much about the money, but more about the people that I met, because it was a major, major high point in my life, I think, to be even able to go on that stage in the panel and talk so openly and so truthfully about myself and to hear your guys' story. So that's the reason we had the event, but so much more has come from the event than what I thought. So it was an amazing day, just personally for me anyway. Yeah,
it was incredible. It was incredible. And you told me that you just pulled it together in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I can't get off for that.
No, it was crazy. It was a lot of running around and,
yeah,
you know, a lot of support from different people. But we did our best and we pulled it off to the best of our abilities, I think. So it was a good day.
Yeah, oh, that's an understatement, to be honest. It was an amazing day.
Thank you.
It was amazing. Seriously, it was absolutely brilliant.
Thank you.
Yeah. So like you've been on a bit of a, I suppose, a bit of a whirlwind recently, kind of sharing your story. But I mean,
yeah,
like obviously, I mean, you were saying this on the panel. I think you said it to me as well. Like you were a little apprehensive maybe at the beginning of sharing your own story. So how did you feel when you actually did start sharing your story? Did you kind of feel a bit of stigma, or did you self-stigmatize, or did you just feel pressure, or what? Like, how was it for you?
Yeah, so it was a terrifying decision to start to share my story. It was a lot of kind of long conversations with family members, late night conversations of what might happen, what might not happen. And it got to a point where I was kind of getting so unwell and so frustrated with my treatment that I was just like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to share my story. And I tell you, it's kind of become so much of a freeing experience for me, because for years I've been just masking myself absolutely massively, you know, and to come out and just share my story and be authentic and to have so much of a positive response from people it's just been really empowering for me. You know, I've gotten a few, you know, you always get a few bad comments and a few people like that. But overall, I mean, the support has been amazing. I've gotten people who I don't know just get in contact with me, giving me amazing advice, you know, where I can look, what I can do. I've gotten mothers, kids getting in contact with me. Wow. And I suppose from that, it's for me become more of not just about me, like it's become more of a passion to give these other people a voice, because I felt so, so alone going through the whole mental health system, so hopeless. Just like it was the end for me. Like there's no getting out of this, you know, there's no getting out of this mental torture I was going through. And when I gave myself that voice, it was just freeing. And now I want to use whatever little platform I have to just let other people know that it's safe to have a voice as well. And to stand up for yourself, really, I suppose. And
yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to do for other people, you know?
Yeah. I couldn't have put it better myself. That's exactly it, isn't it? And it can be quite daunting, but it can also be quite empowering. It can be therapeutic. It can be quite good for your confidence as well. And then you do realize, you know, that you are and can be part of a supportive community.
Definitely.
And that's amazing, because you go from being, as you said, so kind of isolated and lonely.
Yeah.
To having so many people reach out to you. And like, that can be a bit daunting, because I've had it myself. So, you know, you kind of wonder, why are they contacting you? But then, as you said, you're giving yourself a voice and you're giving other people a voice.
Exactly.
And I think that's something I didn't realize at the beginning either, is that...
Mm.
You're actually giving other people a voice too.
Yeah. And you know? I suppose, yeah, like I wish there was some major changes I could make right now, you know, like I've gotten so passionate about it, but I think just hearing from people the darkness they feel in this kind of circle in the mental health system, I just want to shed some light on it, I suppose, because I have so much experience in it and I know what people are going through. And now going into appointments myself, like I was even in an appointment this morning, I go in with a completely different attitude of, you know, I'll even go in now with a notebook about writing down what, because they're writing notes all the time. So yeah. I'll go in and write down my notes of my experience in the appointment, what I want to put forward, just in a completely different mind space. And I think that comes across as well, because I've been talked down to so much. I've been you know, belittled. I've been honestly just disrespected so much in the system that I wouldn't want anyone to experience that, but I know they are. So hopefully by me sharing my story, I can let them know that you can actually advocate for yourself. And if people are saying that this is what, like, I've been told a lot, like, for example, when I first kind of started getting into treatment, if you don't take a medication, we're not going to help you, you know? And now knowing that's actually kind of against your rights, you know, you deserve help no matter what. And there's nothing, I'm on medication now myself. There's nothing wrong with being on it, but just those little things of knowing like your rights about things, knowing what you deserve, you know? And I'm still fighting for that. Like I'm still fighting every day for my own treatment. And it's seeming like such a long drawn out experience, but hopefully I'm hoping I'll get there, you know?
Yeah. Well, what you're doing is incredible. And I just, when you were talking about the medication there, I had Ken Kilbride from ADHD Ireland on my podcast. It was the last one I did. And he had a great little nugget. He said, pills don't build skills.
Exactly.
I thought it was brilliant because,
yeah,
I mean, it's totally go hand in hand, you know. I mean, obviously you have to work on yourself, but like the meds do help as well. But yeah. But like, I think what you're saying about kind of going in and feeling kind of a bit intimidated going into appointments and that, and now that you've given yourself a voice, and that's what I meant to feel a little while ago when I said about building your confidence.
Yeah.
I didn't mean, it's not in an ego way. It's an actually just, as you said, it's just standing up for yourself and being able to go in and ask questions and actually say, listen, this is my health. I mean, you need to help me here, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like I've been in situations where I've been in appointments, just kind of like actually in tears, not being able to speak for myself because I've been in such a bad place and having to have a family member there speaking for me, you know? And a lot of the times they don't even want to have a family member in with you to speak for you. So I think just if I could speak to or put a message out there to any kind of young person would be to really think about what care that you want, like what would be your main thing that you feel like you need, and just to go after that, you know. And if you can't get it from someplace, there's so many different other areas you can get it from.
Yeah. How do you find, and we talked about this on the panel, but I want to ask you again, because it's kind of just come up again in the last few days for me, but how do you find social media?
So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, there's so many pros and cons to it. I mean, I have found it very, very hard in the past, I suppose, because with the body dysmorphia, I was really never on social media before. And even, you know, I go through a lot of health anxiety, and just randomly going through Instagram reels and stuff like that, there would be a lot of medical things come up, which would really like get me into a panic. So it was a very different side of it for me. So in that way, social media is really hard when it's image based and everything. But doing this whole journey for me through social media has given me a platform to just have a voice, I suppose, and put it out there. And I don't know who's listening. I don't know if anyone is listening, but, you know, I'll get, you know, some nights here, I'll be sitting here and just get really thinking about a subject and just go to the car and I'll put up a video, you know, because I just feel like I just need to say this. I need to let people know what is going on and what they can do. And yeah, it's turned into a bit of a funny thing now where like my family would be like, oh, she's out in the car now again, making a video, you know. But yeah, it's just a space for me that I can share and really meet people in a similar situation to me. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. And don't stop either. Don't stop what you're doing. Don't let the very, very small minority comments with the, you know, stop the, you know, huge majority of support that you're
definitely
getting. Like I have found being on in, like I was exactly the same as you. I used to stay on Twitter an awful lot because it's not image based, and then obviously when I started doing all this, I ended up on Instagram.
Yeah,
but I found Instagram to be a great support, and to be in like, or included in this amazing community on Instagram of, there's always people, you know, offering up advice, and you know, and you can filter out the stuff that you don't want to see.
Definitely.
I know it comes up every now and again, but if you're in a better headspace, it's not as bad. But I mean. And then what I found is exactly what you said a little while ago, from doing this, even the podcast, but doing all of this, it's the relationships I have developed from doing this is what I take from this the most, because 100%. They're invaluable.
Yeah.
So like, you know, if you're stuck on something, or, you know, if you need just someone to chat to, or if you have a question, you know, I've got, you know, like a nutritionist that I could, you know, I might just fire a message over, or whoever, it doesn't make it, you know.
And exactly.
That's what I have found the most beneficial thing about social media. It's the little community. Because
absolutely.
Like as we said earlier on, you can feel so lonely and isolated, and all of a sudden you have this community there.
Yeah, like the other day, I was in a really bad place with the OCD, and I got very I hate using the word triggered because I feel like it's used so much now.
Mm.
But I got very triggered. So, you know, I had mentioned it to family members about what was going on, and I just still wasn't getting that kind of relief. And reaching out to a person that I just recently met, explaining the situation and hearing their input immediately, it was just like this relief, you know, which I've never experienced. And I said to a family member, like, oh my God, this is amazing just to have this community that I can reach out to and just feel understood, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's missing so, so much in the mental health system, just feeling understood and feeling like you're not crazy, or you're not this unusual person, because we all struggle, you know, in different levels and different severities. And you know, even this morning at the appointment I was in, I tend to try and ask a lot more questions now because I'm very curious about how things are run. And I was kind of, they said to me that, you know, eating disorders and OCD are mainly kind of treated best in the community. And for me, I know that to be untrue, because I have been through both. I've been through a severe eating disorder, and I know that I wouldn't be here today if I didn't get the hospital treatment that I did. And I know also that with OCD, it can be extremely hard to even cope at home, you know, so you do need that extra support sometime. And I kind of voiced that to them, and I said, look, you know, It's a frustrating thing to hear that, because everyone going through OCD is so different. And I actually got an answer that, you know, look, this is the way the HSE has set up the system years and years back. And that's what these people are taught. So there's actually no new, I suppose, thinking around things. It's just, it's black and white. This is what's done. We're doing this, you know? So I suppose being curious, and it's also extremely frustrating to hear that, because you can imagine how many people are going through that revolving door of, here, just go home and deal with it, you know. So finding out these little bits of information have been very, very interesting for me, and also frustrating. You know, it's given me something really to kind of delve into and think about, okay, this is what we need to work on. This is what we need to create as little communities in a different way and a different support system than what the public system is providing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Right. I think we've probably got through most of the stuff there, but I'll pop the GoFundMe link in the description.
Thank you, Keith.
Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you want to talk about?
I feel like I could talk to you for hours, but...
I know, yeah.
And I think, is there anything else?
Well, there was actually one thing I wanted to ask you now. I know we've got to cover this already, not in this podcast, but separately.
Yeah.
What plans for the future?
Yes.
Are you kind of just taking things kind of step at a time?
Yeah.
Because I know someone recently said that you know, big, they had envisioned big plans for you.
Yes.
But for yourself, like, I mean, how do you feel with things at the moment?
Yeah. So for me, it's very much kind of day to day I'm living.
Right.
So my goals at the moment, they're in two ways. So like, I would love to just be able to go to an Airbnb somewhere, to a hotel, and have a good time. Like, you know, yeah. To be able to go to a restaurant without being afraid. Like, little things are major goals for me. Mm-hmm. But also I have this other side of me that has bigger goals of going into advocacy and speaking and, you know, trying to create a safe space for people. So with my mental health, it's very limiting my goals at the moment. Mm-hmm. But in a future prospect, I suppose would be bigger goals. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Completely agree.
Yeah.
Well, don't stop what you're doing, because I think it's incredible. I think what you're doing is amazing. And you have this energy about you, and you have this wisdom about you, and you have this inner, I don't know if you know these things, but you have this inner strength, you know, about you that it's just, it's kind of infectious as well.
Thank you, Keith.
Don't stop what you're doing, because I think it's amazing. And I know other people at the moment think what you're doing is amazing as well. So look, before we let you go, do you want to give your socials a plug?
Just for sure.
So they can watch your videos in the car.
Yeah, my car videos, my famous car videos. So
yeah, yeah.
And it's actually not even my car. So that's okay. That's the other thing. So my Instagram is Change with Emma. I think it's Change_with Emma.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then my Facebook is just Emma O'Sullivan, and my Twitter is, I will have to check, because I'm a big granny when it comes to social media a lot of the time, and Twitter kind of scares me, but it is @creationbyemma. That's my Twitter.
Okay.
Instagram is the main place where I post a lot of my stuff. And, you know, really trying to get the GoFundMe off the ground. So if anyone can even, you know, every little bit helps to kind of get me where I need to be. So that would be really appreciated as well. Yeah.
Right, maybe we'll leave it there, Emma.
Definitely.
I think we've covered loads of things. But look, more than likely, you'll be back on the podcast again soon.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, oh, you will, definitely. Yeah. Like, I don't even know if we've covered half the stuff today. But
that's the thing. Yeah, yeah, we need a couple of episodes, I think.
I think we probably do.
Yeah, a series maybe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll do this as part one anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah. Emma, thank you so much for giving up your time for doing this today. I very much appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Keith. It means so much more than you'll ever know. And I'm honored. So thank you.
Ah, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. Right, guys, we leave it there. Don't know when I'll be back with another episode. Hopefully it'll be soon. Actually, it probably will be soon. I've probably got the bug now. Anyway, I'll be back probably again. But anyway, we leave it there, guys, and we'll see you all very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.